Good morning. It's time for In the Green Outdoors with Gail Martin and Carol Kelly. Each week, the ladies will bring you gardening and planting ideas, tell you about native Ohio plants, prairies and habitats, and great tips for everything in the green outdoors. This week with Carol Kelly.
Hello again, everyone. Are you as discouraged as I am in attempting to keep up with the crazy weather this spring? Trying to stick to my usual garden cleanup and planting schedule has been a challenge. While I have tried in this radio program in previous years to give advice as to when to plant what, I give up, and I'm simply going to say to anyone trying to plant things this year, best of luck. But there is one bit of knowledge that perhaps can help. Often referred to as folk wisdom or old wives' tales, much of this sort of knowledge was passed down from farmers and gardeners to the next generation over time. I used to think they were little more than imaginative invention. Things like, when the daffodils bloom, it's time to plant peas, or it's time to plant corn when oak leaves are the size of squirrels' ears. I've also heard a more modern cry, if I don't get my pre-emergent herbicide down by April 1st, I'll have crabgrass. Truth is, though, crabgrass, as well as many other plant seeds, germinate based on soil temperatures, not what the calendar says. According to research done at the Ohio State Agricultural Technical Institute in Worcester, at the earliest, crabgrass does not grow based on air temperature, but when the average daily soil temperatures are between 57 to 64 degrees Fahrenheit. So although we may experience air temperatures that warm, and we've had that and more this year, soil temperatures take longer to reach that level. Observing forsythia bushes actually is a pretty good indicator of soil temperature. According to the University of Purdue, forsythia can help estimate when to apply crabgrass preventer because these shrubs will be in full bloom prior to crabgrass germination. Even many professional turf managers use this plant as a sign as to when to begin pre-emergent crabgrass preventer. Savvy gardeners now know that soil temperature is one of the best indicators as to when to plant certain seeds, and that's reflected in the sayings that I mentioned a moment ago. The modern soil thermometer was invented in 1714, yet the relationship between soil temperature and seed germination rates wasn't really well understood until about 150 years after that. Farmers and gardeners of old were a lot closer to the natural world, and by necessity, a lot more observant as to what was going on outdoors than we are today. However, we may turn once again to the Ohio State University, since they provide a lot of useful information as to when specific trees, shrubs, and other perennial plants may be expected to bloom, and what insects may be expected to emerge at any given time. You can do a Google search using the term the Ohio State Phenology Calendar. Once at that website, you simply enter your zip code and you're linked to a daily calendar of all the phenological events occurring in your area. Simply put, phenology is the study of the cycles and seasonal changes of plant and animal species and how these changes affect the interrelationships among them. Scientists have found that the timing of phenological events of many plant species has been shifting as a result of the changing temperatures and rainfall patterns associated with climate change. Obviously, this is having a big impact on the natural environment. Because plants are at the base of the food chain, anything that affects plants will impact all the interconnected parts of the ecosystem. Changes in the timing of phenological events can be used as an indicator of a changing climate. Humans have been observing the natural world and tying it to agricultural practices for thousands of years, but the first written observations of plant phenology were recorded by the Japanese over 1,000 years ago. In Northern Europe, records dating back to the 1400s indicate that agriculturists began to make detailed notes tracking the emergence of phenophases in plants. Since so many insects depend upon plants for food for their larvae, this is of extreme importance. As just one small example, for butterflies and moths, there's the cycle from egg to caterpillar or larva to chrysalis, or pupa, and finally to the adult. I'm sure most listeners are aware that certain plants are required as host plants, that is, plants that a specific insect will lay eggs on. If a specific plant on which the insects lay their eggs is not available, there will be no next generation. As for insects that feed on the nectar and pollen of certain flowers, if these are not in bloom when the insects emerge and are needing them as food, well, you can see the problem. Global warming is altering the timing of key biological events and relationships across many taxonomic groups, plants, animals, insects, and so on. So the fact that over millennia, all of this was in sync throughout the natural world, disruptions in the climate, no, not the weather in any given year, but the actual climate over time, that causes any plants to leaf out or bloom earlier, presents an important problem that can cause mismatches between plants and their pollinators. I haven't time to go deeply into this complicated topic, but to learn more and to actually contribute to this expanding science, consider going to the inaturalist.org website. As it states on their homepage, every observation can contribute to biodiversity science, from the rarest butterfly to the most common backyard weed. They share their findings with scientific data repositories like the Global Biodiversity Information Facility to help scientists find and use the data. All we have to do is observe. Now, I did promise when I concluded my last segment that I would offer a few pointers relative to keeping healthy any Easter plants that you may have purchased or received over that holiday weekend, so let me go ahead and do that now. It makes things easier that most all the usual Easter flowers are grown from bulbs, so whether you've been gifted with lilies, tulips, daffodils, hyacinths, or all of the above, all are content with pretty much the same care. Let me first point out that all parts of Easter lilies are toxic to humans if consumed. While this is highly unlikely that a large amount would be ingested, dizziness, stomach pain, and possibly collapse would result. These plants also are extremely toxic to cats, causing liver failure if not treated immediately, whereas dogs are not affected. So if your household includes children or cats, take care to keep them away from this lovely but potentially dangerous plant. Daffodils may cause life-threatening organ failure in cats, dogs, and, while rarely fatal, can cause vomiting, diarrhea, and intense abdominal pain in children. Now, like most indoor plants, all of these various plants that grow from bulbs prefer daytime temperatures of 65 to 70 degrees, but easily tolerate nighttime temperatures of 50 degrees or even a little lower, although we humans in residence do not. Put a pot in bright light, but not direct sunlight. The reason for this is that the sun will stimulate photosynthesis and encourage the plant to grow, hastening and thereby shortening the blooming period. The way to make such plants bloom longer is to slow down the growth, hence a cooler environment is better. Of course, avoid drafts and don't overwater. If the soil remains constantly damp, the bulbs, which already contain plenty of moisture, may rot. Water only when the soil surface becomes dry to the touch. As Easter lily flowers open, remove the bright yellow, pollen-covered anthers before the pollen starts to shed. Not only will this prolong the flower's life, it prevents the pollen from staining the white petals. Remove the flowers as they wither, but continue to water as needed to keep the foliage growing, because after flowering, you can continue to enjoy your lily outdoors in subsequent years. Your lily may be planted in the ground, but you do need to wait until the weather has settled and the soil has thoroughly warmed up, usually by late May. To plant outdoors, select a sunny site with well-drained soil. Loosen the garden soil and then remove the plant from the pot and set the bulb, roots down of course, 6 inches below the surface. If some leaves remain green, try to keep the root ball especially intact as you can settle it into the soil, removing any stems and leaves later once they have dried, just as you do with any in-ground bulbs that you may already have blooming in your yard. You may choose to fertilize once or twice during the summer, applying it to the soil per package directions around the plant at least 2 inches from the stem. I like to stretch compost into the soil using my clawed tool or a scuffle hoe being careful not to disturb the roots nor damage any still green foliage. Water during dry spells. An Easter lily may even bloom the first fall after planting outdoors, but then in future years it will bloom in summer. My Easter lily has survived a number of winters in a flower bed, although it's too soon to tell this spring if it made it through the particularly bitter cold of our past winter. I'll just have to wait and see. Survival rate can be improved by applying a mulch, for example, evergreen clippings or leaves, after the first hard frost in late fall, which I did, so hopefully it will once more reappear. As for tulips, daffodils, and hyacinths, again, as with lilies, remove spent flowers, but because the leaves continue to replenish the nutrients in the bulbs, try to keep these growing as long as possible. These, however, do not get planted out right away, as do the Easter lilies. Once all the foliage is quite dead, remove the bulbs, gently shake off any soil, allow any remaining soil on the bulbs to dry out, and then store them over the summer in a paper or net bag. One local grocery store sells net bags of slightly faded produce at a discounted price. I always save these bags for such things as storing bulbs. Plant your bulbs in late fall as you would any such bulbs that are sold at that time of year. If you have tulips, though, good luck, since squirrels love to dig up and eat the bulbs. There's one other plant you may have received at Easter that requires a completely different type of care, an Easter cactus. This cannot be planted outdoors, but it's fairly easy to keep as a houseplant year-round. Like Thanksgiving and Christmas cacti, it's a member of the cactus family, but this is native to the tropics, not the desert, and these are epiphytes. Epiphytes don't grow in soil in the wild, preferring to occupy rocks, trees, and even other plants as their substrate. Here are the main requirements for growing an Easter cactus. It prefers dappled, filtered light, and definitely requires a pot with a drainage hole. This cactus would never sit in wet soil in the wild. Use a loose, well-draining soil and allow it to dry out fully before watering thoroughly, allowing the extra water to drain out. Ideally, keep the humidity around your Easter cactus high, as it prefers rainforest conditions. Fertilize regularly during the growing season. Well, keeping in mind what you've learned about phenology, be especially observant this year as to what you see in your own yards, local natural areas, or when you're hiking the tall grass trail. I'll continue to share my observations from week to week that reflects the interconnectedness of everything in the natural world. Until next time, this is Carol Kelly saying, now is the time for patience in many ways, but we can take advantage of the fresh air and what sunshine the clouds do let through while maintaining our distance from the soggy earth a while yet longer in the green outdoors.
And there's your show for the week. In the Green Outdoors is a production of WZMO Radio. The show airs Saturdays and Mondays right after the second cup at about 9:30 a.m. If you have a question or comment for Carol or Gail, you can email it to WZMO@roadrunner.com. Thank you for listening.